Change is coming to college athletics. The house settlement is here, and today we're going to break down what it means from a fan's perspective. What is it? What does it mean, and why should you care? We're going to do all that today in kind of simple terms, just on the need-to-know stuff for you and us as fans. We also have some big recruiting updates for 2026, and a new member joins Florida State staff. So lots of talk today about football, about the game, how it's changing. Because, you know, Michael, this house settlement is something that we've been talking about on here, just kind of hinting at for the better part of a year now. But it's always kind of been if, when, maybe, could it happen someday? But it's here, and it's time to really break this thing down. So excited to get into this one. But before we do that, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me for another episode.
Oh, Jesse, I'm good, and thanks for having me. Listen, as I always like to say, this ain't your granddaddy's college football anymore. We are in a new, unprecedented era of players being paid, back pay, rules. The NCAA is basically dead, and we're going to get into all of that. So let's jump in.
Let's start with the house settlement, and let's go ahead and put up, I made a couple slides here for those of you watching on YouTube to kind of follow along with here. So let's start with, what is it? What does this mean? Well, in a nutshell, it means schools can now legally pay players. Obviously, you know, players have been getting paid since, what, about 2021, I think it was, but now it is legally coming out of the school's pocket and not the collective's pocket. This is a 10-year deal set to begin around July 1st when schools will start sending out these payments. And now, what does it involve? It involves back pay plus revenue sharing going into the future. There will be about $2.8 billion settled into back pay for players going back to 2016. And it will be starting with revenue sharing in the 25-26 season at around $20.5 million per school. So, Michael, when we look at these first two points here, you know, this is something where schools now have to kind of pony up to help take care of some of this budget that's paying players. And, you know, to make it clear, I want to first say that, you know, me and you both, Michael, I feel like have never been opposed to paying players, right? When I get it, they get all these things, the scholarships and all that type of stuff. I understand that argument. And I was on that side of the fence for a long time. But with the amount of money that these schools are making now, I just think it's fair to pay them a portion of what they help bring in. But I also think that there needs to be guidelines and fair market value with some of these. And that's not at all remotely what we have now. So that's something that this is looking to aim here. Now, I'll hit on the last point, and I'm going to throw it back to you for some kind of – I'm going to hit the highlights and let Michael fill in the gaps here. And so what it aims to do is provide NIL clarity and enforcement in some ongoing litigation that's going against the NCAA, the three major suits there, and is supposed to provide some structure to the NIL market. Now, on these three things, Michael, before I throw it to you, look, what you need to know is schools can legally pay their athletes now. They're going to have to start sharing the revenue. There will be some back pay involved. We'll get into some topics, some subjects on that. But it looks like year one, schools are going to be able to. They do not have to, but they can choose to pay up to $20.5 million in revenue sharing for the 25-26 season. Look, if you want to be competitive, you're going to have to pay, right? And Florida State is expected to pay, so this isn't something that we should really worry about, but it's probably going to be a really big deal for some of these smaller schools where $20.5 million might be your entire budget. And so that's kind of where you're at with that. And then the last thing here is, I think when you talk about NIL clarity and enforcement, I think this is one where, you know, you're just really trying to bring some guardrails to the situation. And we're going to expand on all these things going forward later in the show. But I think it also, there's two facets to this, right? I think one, you're also helping the players by everything being in an open system, by having like a player will have seen it. I've seen it online. You know, a player is going to have their own like personal profile that the school, the company, third-party companies and all these, the agents and everything, they can monitor too. So that way, you know, there's a big problem right now where a school might tell a kid this is what they're going to get paid, and then they show up and they don't get paid that. There's some shady dealings and things like that between schools and students. So I think this is going to provide a lot more structure in how everything is handled, which is good for both sides.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, the settlement provides that 10-year a window of pay for the schools to pay the $20.5 million, and it's supposed to increase each year by 4%. So at some point it will be somewhere around 30 to 30 $3 million, I believe, by at the end of the 10-year settlement there as well. And I think I love the words you put there, is that the settlement aims to bring kind of enforcement and regulations to this site, to this idea. Now, it the question is going to be, what more can it hold to? Because it aims to do that, but will it be able to do that as well? I think some of the other key facets of this is that, as you mentioned, that schools can opt into this. So you're going to look at conferences like the Big East, okay, that are basically only basketball and other sports. So think of a St. John's, a UConn, things like that, where football is either non-existent, a Gonzaga, where football is either non-existent or very little cared about. And they're going to have the ability to opt into this and pay a higher percentage to certain sports, whether it be basketball or of those natures. But what is also being talked about is the fact that most Power Four programs are going to opt into this, or all will of the Power Four program, but not all of them will be able to get to that $20.5 million max. Think of a Wake Forest, right? Think of a Wake Forest that doesn't have the necessarily that type of revenue coming in, even with the ACC and the TV money that they're getting. They may not be able to get to that $20.5 million. They might be able to only get to 15 of that, or 14 or 10 of that. So even though schools are being given the ability to go to $20.5 million, not every Power Four program is going to be able to get there. And I know at some point we're going to talk about how they're going to come up with this revenue, because it's not just like being handed to them. They're going to have to figure out a way to do that. But every school is going to try to figure out how to do that as well, too. And I think one thing that fans may not realize about this is that there is going to be the ability, when you talked about the profile stuff, for fans to know exactly what players are being paid. And that's, I mean, Jesse, think about the vitriol that comes now when players aren't doing what they're supposed to do on the field. Think about when we actually find out what the real dollar amounts are, how that's going to change fandom and how we respond to players when they're not performing well on the field.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point too, right? Because on the one hand, I do feel like there is the argument for them being open to a little bit more criticism. You know, a lot of people are real, you know, kid gloves with the college kids because they never got paid before, but now you're being paid to perform. And so, yeah, I just think that's something that you open it up to.
Correct.
And so the next slide we're going to talk about here is important details that you need to know about this house settlement. Now, the first thing is the money. This is what this was all about to begin with. As we mentioned, $20.5 million basically salary cap in 2025-2026 season. That will increase, as Michael said, every year to as high as $33 million by 2025 or 2035, the end of the current deal. Now, obviously, we know there is a lot of money to be thrown around, but this will not be thrown around equally. This will be going primarily to your revenue-driving sports, such as football, men's basketball, and baseball there as well. And then, you know, they're gonna pass them around to the Olympic sports and things like that, I'm sure too. But, you know, the starting quarterback is going to be making a lot more than like the lead swimmer for the dive team, right? That's just the way college athletics works. This $20.5 million number is roughly 22% of the revenue. And this is also addition to the scholarships and other benefits that these student athletes already receive. So they will be paid, but they will still be on scholarship. None of the, you know, some people will make them pay for their own scholarship or whatever. it's not going to be the case. That's how it's going to be. The other thing here is, what about NIL collectives? And, you know, let me stop and rewind that real quick. This $20.5 million number, it's not a hard cap. And I think that is the one thing that's been a little bit disappointing for me, right? You know, when you look at these numbers, is what I was really hoping with this would provide a fair and competitive balance a little bit here. When you look at that number, if everyone had to abide by the same number, whether you can or not, I mean, that's not exactly the fair part of it. But for those that can, the ones who can throw these $50 million numbers at rosters like in Ohio State and Oregon and all that, maybe it would back them off. You know, but then you talk about the number right after that. The question right after that was, what about NIL collectives? They still do exist. There can still be, and we're going to talk about this more in a second, but there can still be NIL deals enticements on top of this $20.5 million number. And so you can still have some of the ones, some of the haves separate themselves from the have-nots. And so that is a little bit disappointing there. Now, the other thing that I do want to mention here that I think is critically important from like a Florida State standpoint, maybe even Clemson and UNC individually, is the revenue gap. I think right now matters more than ever, because keep in mind, everybody can pay that $20.5 million every year. Not everybody gets paid the same amount of money to be able to cover that $20.5 million every year. So that $30, $40, $50 million revenue gap that you get by being in the ACC versus, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten in the future as it grows, that's going to be even more important. Because think about it. If you're tabbed with paying $20.5 million and you're making $30 million less than your, you know, your opponent there, Florida and the SEC or whatever the case may be, That's a big pill to swallow. So that does make a pretty big difference there as well. That's something that I think is important for people to know. Now, the other thing that is going to be big is, like we said, NIL collectives are still going to exist. They're going to probably help more broker the deals from the businesses, because all new NIL deals over $600 do need to be vetted by a third-party clearinghouse known as NIL Go. This is going to, we're going to talk more about that in just a second, but you know, no more hopefully shady deals. That's going to be something that's interesting. And so what I want to talk about here is the enforcement for a second. So coming from a report from the Deloitte officials, I hope I said that. Did I say that right, Michael?
You did.
Okay.
You did.
That's a funny looking name. I think they're actually headquartered here in Charlotte, so I should know that. But the enforcement arm basically takes every deal that comes in and they look, are you an associated entity? Like, are you a booster giving money that you're not supposed to? Is it a valid business purpose? They're actually, you're doing something for the money. They're not just giving it to you pay for play, which is what we see now. You know, you see someone make 20 or a $2 million NIL deal and they've done like one Bojangles commercial. that probably ain't going to cut it anymore. And then a range of compensation. And that range of compensation is defined by data from thousands of deals from past NIL deals into college and NFL. And this is something that an official said during one of the meetings, is that 70% of past booster deals would have been denied. Basically, that's where they just give you money to come to my school because that's what I want. And 90% from public companies would have been approved. So what this tells you, Michael, is that, you know, when you look at these numbers, basically, Dingle Dong there from Miami, Ruiz, he can't just pay you to come play for Miami anymore.
Correct.
Now he has to go to this company that's currently tanking and justify why they're spending all of that money. They just have to make it a business expense now, right? It's like cheating on your taxes. This is basically what they're going to do, because, you know, at the end of the day, Michael, everyone's still going to cheat. And, you know, hey, Florida State, whatever you're doing, if you're listening to this, I encourage it for you, too. Let's just, you know, push it until they stop you. But that's essentially what's going to happen, man, is these deals actually have to look like they're legitimate business deals. Again, no $2 million for like one car commercial or something like that. You actually, you know, what they basically said is, if you're being offered, say Plant the Spear wants to pay Tommy Castellanos $100,000 to come on the podcast. Ooh, boy, we're going to need some members to do that.
Yeah, right.
But typically Deloitte says, okay, well, this is typically a deal that's valued at $50,000. They can either adjust that deal to the normal market value, or they can also appeal it. Now, that's going to create a whole nother problem that we're going to talk about later. But that's essentially what the enforcement looks to do, just to make sure that this is not a pay for play by a private booster or by just a big money donor. And it has to be kind of a legitimate business deal. Now, the last thing that you need to know, and I'll throw it back to Michael for his points on all of these, is there are roster changes coming. You've heard of this. You've heard us talk about this. New roster limits and the ability for you to scholarship your full roster. Now, I have heard from multiple coaches at ACC Media Days last year when this was rumored. Most of them are not going to do this. They're not going to give 105 scholarship spots on this roster, because some schools just don't have that money when you're already trying to pay out this $20.5 million. So there still will be walk-ons. There still will be some NIL things that'll help with that and some financial aid. That's what I heard some coaches talking about last year. But the scholarship limits to know is football is going from 85 to 105. Men's basketball is going from 13 to 15. And the biggest change probably is baseball. Going from 11.7 all the way up to 34. So that's going to be, you know, I don't know how much of the money is going to get passed around to a lot of the baseball, but man, just being able to basically scholarship your full roster now is going to be huge for that sport.
Huge. it's going to be really big for baseball. Yeah. So with the, you know, with the $20.5 million, you know, part of the conversation for Florida State specifically is going to be, like you said, Jesse, how do we make up the difference where the TV revenue isn't covering? Because there's a, you know, right now there's about a $30 million gap between what the SEC and the Big Ten a little bit is making versus what the ACC is bringing in. Right. So Florida State's going to have to explore other options beyond just using the TV money to make up that gap, so that what happens is when they use that $20.5 million, it's also not preventing them from other operations of the athletic department. I mean, athletic departments around the country, I'm already hearing that they are making cuts to certain staff members, coaches' salaries, new coaching salaries are going to be a lot lesser than what they have been. They're not going to be as long as they have been. You're going to start seeing maybe a little less bells and whistles on facilities, which is a great thing. Why? The football only facility got built before this all came out so that we could get that done. But you're going to see a lot less facilities being built. You're also going to see potentially the other Olympic sports being looked at very carefully to say, hey, this is a good sport, but we're not going to be able to have everything. I know Michael Alford, the AD for Florida State, has said that we're going to try to keep every Olympic sport, but there's going to come a point where they're going to have to decide whether or not they need a beach volleyball team or not. And then also, Florida State started exploring this, and an article recently just came out this past week, Jesse, highlighting the fact that there are at least five Power Four schools right now, and I think a couple of them are in the ACC, that are getting ready to go public with private equity, where these investment firms are going to actually make a, I think I heard the number around $500 million investment into that athletic program, and they're going to get a percentage of ownership of that athletic program. Florida State, I hope you're one of them.
Right.
And because that money is going to infuse capital to be able to do some of the things they need to do. So yeah, you're going to see all of that. Of course, advertising, there is going to come a day, Jesse, where we're going to look at a Florida State jersey and it's going to have our beautiful Seminole logo on it. It's going to have the ACC, a Nike sign, and Bojangles on it. You know what I mean? Because it's going to help bring in revenue, the stuff they're going to do with the building and everything like that. And then
hopefully that's an SEC or a Big Ten logo.
It'd be nice. There. It'd be nice. Not ACC, right? And then of course, the fans. We are going to be expected to contribute. I know we're going to talk about the collective thing in just a second there, but I think also we have to be real. Ticket sales, merchandise, all that is going to go up. Booster contribution, it's all going to go up in the name of trying to make sure that we are able to cover. If we want to be elite, these are the things that is going to fall to us.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, that's the truth. And because, again, the schools, their cost is going to go up to operate this. So they're going to pass that to someone else. But we're going to talk about that more in a second here. Now, what are some of the remaining challenges with the house settlement here? First off is further litigation. Obviously, there's a Title IX lawsuit that is happening right now that only affects the past portion of this, where the back pay, but that took all of about 10 minutes to happen after they passed this thing. You're also going to have, once these NIL rejections start happening, once you start rejecting these deals, there is nothing that's saying that these kids can't, you know, they can appeal it, but there's nothing that says that they can't get a lawyer and say, well, this is what I believe my client's fair market value is, you know, and they can sue you for that. There's also the other one out there where it sounds like what they want to do with this to help the enforcement part of it is that basically all the Power Four schools who are going to agree to this essentially sign a piece of paperwork, a framework, to hold everybody accountable to this, right? And that is, we are gonna follow these policies. We are gonna do it this way. And because of some recent state litigation that has come out, especially I know at least in Tennessee, that allows them to kind of supersede all of this stuff, it's gonna ask you to sign this basically ignoring what state law says. So there are also antitrust laws because, again, Michael, you know, as they say in racing anyway, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
That's right.
And so, you know, with some of these, like if the state law is in place for you to be able to maybe get a leg up on everybody and you're just doing what your state law says, why wouldn't you try that until you figure out what you kind of push that edge, push that bounty there? So those are some of the things that are still the remaining challenges there. The NCAA is seeking government intervention from like a federal level, which has not happened yet. So there is that they're waiting on as well. Employees or not, will students become employees? Could there be a collective bargaining coming in the future, maybe the next go round of this? That's something, because making them employees is a big thing. You know, that offers a whole different door of challenges, taxes, benefits, things like that. Can you be fired? And a lot of situations there that would muddy the water there. And then the one for me, and I put this kind of as a personal challenge here for this thing, Michael, is the actual enforcement of it. Will this be enforced? Can and will schools abide by rules and punishments? Like right now, the NCAA can punish whoever they want. No one really cares what they have to say. And so will they abide by this? How much will they try and push the envelope to get away with things? You know, you were telling me earlier that, like, talking about some from women's softball and some of the situations are like, tampering is still going to happen.
Oh yeah.
You know, everybody might be paying now, but tampering is still going to happen. So how much is this actually going to rein in? I think a lot of what the house settlement will do for the college game depends on how much they can enforce this and how much everybody's willing to follow it. Now, if everybody is willing to jump on board and do what live by the letter of the law, I think this can be good for the game. But again, you know, we're still kind of that, It's like the states without the federal government, right? We just kind of all do our own thing and we all just kind of know we're together. But like, we don't have to do anything in the interest of anybody else.
Right.
So unless everybody follows this, man, this is probably going to be all for naught. But it has the potential to be good if everybody does.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me back up real quick, because I want to make sure we appropriately address the Title IX thing. So there were 8 female athletes, as you know, Jesse, who appealed the house settlement, because their argument is that the back pay, not the current pay, the back pay, the $2.8 billion, is being unfairly applied to men's sports, specifically football and basketball versus women's sport, right? And so the argument they're trying to make is that they should be have equal payments go to them as well. But the thing about Title IX, Jesse, and we were talking about this in the pre-show, is that Title IX is based on equal access, not equal results. So they have equal access to the $2.8 billion, but they don't have equal results because their sport, their NIL image, whatever, didn't produce the same amount of financial windfall for the school itself. So this is probably going to be, I'm not a lawyer. We don't try to be lawyers here, but based on what I've heard and read and everything, this is going to be a case that could play out in a couple weeks or maybe a year, but likely it's not going to have that massive effect on that as well too. And then here's the thing about when we talk about enforcement is, If a deal, so let's say I want to pay, I'm Florida State and I want to pay Jesse Kruger to be an offensive lineman for us, and I'm going to pay him $700,000. Yes, sir.
Sign me up, buddy.
I'm going to pay you $700,000 to come shoot one commercial to me, right? And let's say this NIL go through Deloitte says, actually, when we're looking at the fair market value, which is a whole nother conversation we need to have on this idea of fair market value. If they say the fair market value says, actually, this is a $100,000 deal. Well, the
I'll still
school,
do it.
Yeah, Florida State. Yes, you will. Florida State is basically when they sign on this dotted line, they're saying, okay, well, we have the right to appeal. So we might appeal, but after, if we lose the appeal, Florida State basically agrees to be done with it. Florida State does. What it doesn't apply to is the student and its representative. So if Jesse says, well, no, I think I'm worth $700,000, Florida State says, hey, man, we've already appealed for you. They still say no. Jesse now has the right to go and sue Deloitte or NIL Go or whatever it may be, that entity, and there's no restriction for Jesse to do that. So this agreement that the schools are signing doesn't prevent lawsuit. It's just saying the school itself will not engage in that as well. And the problem is, Jesse, is we're going to need Congress. At the end of the day, we're going to need Congress to get in and intervene and make these students employees. Because once you make them employees for the athletic department, now you can collectively bargain. And if you want to see a hard cap and all those things, that's the only place it's going to be able to happen. Now, that's not going to prevent other deals. So, you know, you look at a player like Tom Brady when he was playing for the NFL, he had to live under the NFL salary cap, but that didn't prevent Tom Brady from also going out and getting a deal with Nike and getting a deal with Ford, New England, and all of those things. He still were able to get endorsement deals, but he had to be paid under the NFL salary cap. And so that's honestly the That would actually solve all of our problems. If Congress could make them employees, they could collectively bargain, and then all the shadiness that's happening underneath, it might still happen in some ways, but at least most of it's going to be above board. And then the last thing I'll say about enforcement is, you know, with enforcement, it all predicates on the actual teeth of the thing, right? You can talk to your blue in the face about we're going to enforce this, we're going to enforce that, we're going to enforce that. But just as you mentioned, Jesse, with the state of Tennessee basically passing a law that says that they don't have to abide by any of this new stuff, right? Well, the question is, what wins? Is it federal sovereignty or is it state sovereignty, right? And so as the Power 4 programs are getting together, these people who are agreeing to the settlement saying, hey, if you don't abide by these rules, we now as conferences we're going to decide to potentially kick you out, which is absolutely unprecedented to see a conference kick somebody out. So it'll be curious to see whether or not like states like Tennessee and any other states that do this actually try to circumvent the rule and what teeth does it actually happen? Because the other thing I'll say to you real quick, and I'll throw this back to you is, let's say, you know, Florida, no, let's just use Scum U down there, Dingleberry down there. Let's say he does circumvent the rules and he is cheating and is found to be cheating. What's to say that then once this Deloitte people come back and they say this is what it's going to be, you know, we're going to ban you from postseason, we're going to cut scholarships, I don't know what all the rules can be and the fines, and they just say, you know what, the heck with that. We don't care if we said we're not going to sue. Mm-hmm. This is unfair. We're going to sue. There is no law that actually prevents a school from suing, even if they sign a document saying they won't sue. You can still sue.
You know what it sounds like to me? It's a good time to be a college football player, and it's an even better time to be a lawyer. Because
absolutely. You're going like to make that's a lot of money.
That are getting rich. But no, I agree, man. It's all going to really be pending on the fact that everybody kind of goes at this together. And there has been a lot of schools that have come out and said, look, man, we understand that, right? We have to band together and kind of enforce this thing. You know, now maybe an SEC team or a Big Ten team will go rogue, get booted from the conference, and they'll put us in there. And that would be nice. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, this has the potential to do good things.
Right.
But again, like we've never seen the conferences really act in the best interest of college football as a whole anyway. That's something that's really a big talking point right now with the SEC and the things that they're trying to do. With the devil himself, Greg Sankey, who's doing his job. He's representing the SEC well. But, you know, again, you have to get everybody to play along. But, I mean, like you said, I think you eventually want to get to where it is that CBA and then you have a hard cap and you have all these things where everybody is on the same playing field. And there should be nothing. I think one of the things that is good coming out of this, really NIL in general, not the house settlement, is the fact that kids can go get paid for the other things, right? That's like I remember back in the day, I think it was like some Georgia players or something like sold their game jerseys and got suspended for that. Like that is insane to me that they can't get paid for that. So those are the things that I'm fine with. And those doors that have been opened up, like you said, with Tom Brady and the things he can do outside of the NFL, that is perfectly fair. What I didn't like about it was when you have, you know, someone just basically offering you, like the Bryce Underwood kid at Michigan, I think is his name.
Yep.
Supposedly like a $14 million deal, and the kid has never stepped foot on a college field before. Why? Yeah. That is unbelievable and kind of dumb, if you ask me. So hopefully this kind of brings in some of that type of stuff to at least make it a little bit more fair, because these deals are actually going to get vetted. No more just like big booster, you know, doing these things. But again, the school's got to have the money to compete. And then you can also still have these deals outside. I mean, again, it's just you got to fly under the flag of your company. And so hopefully they do a good job at vetting these deals. Hopefully they can see through that type of stuff and not so much limit what the kids can make, but do it in a way that's fair for everybody. That's really what I'm looking for out of this.
Right. And man, you bring up an absolute great point, Jesse. And to use the Michigan kid who's getting the supposedly $14 million, having never stepped foot on campus, having never played a lick of college football, you know, was a big time recruit, but it wasn't like LeBron James coming out of high school, right?
Yeah.
That, like this is not the same thing. And yet he's going to get $14 million. And this is where the fair market value argument comes into play. Because I think what's going to end up happening is there's two sides to this thing. You have one side that you and me, we're like, yes, man, let's pay these kids, but let's pay them what they actually are worth at the time period, right? But then on the other side of it, as you and I both know, Fair market value basically means if I think my iPhone is worth $500 and I'm willing to pay it, then guess what? I've set a fair market value for $500 for this phone. So really, yeah, the value of somebody, some player, is dependent upon what people feel like he or she is worth. And so now when you get into that aspect of it, it gets so convoluted, and yet you have this third party, this governance structure that's going to basically determine, hey, five schools here in the SEC said that this quarterback was worth $5 million, right? So now the market for that kind of quarterback is going to be set at $5 million. But when the rest of the Power Four says, no, that quarterback's worth $1 million, like what influence of the fair market value is going to play into that? That's why this gets wonky.
Yeah, because name, image, and likeness is really hard to nail down, right? Exactly. I mean, I can tell you, like you said, the iPhone costs $500, but it's kind of hard to brand value is something that's hard to really to define.
Exactly. And,
you know, I definitely think that's going to create some murkiness in how this is going to get worked out, what is and what isn't worth the value. Now, I do think the one protection that's in place that's important, to go back to the enforcement slide here, is that associated entity. Yep. Like, you can't just necessarily be a big time booster,
right,
who's like, oh, yeah, I happen to own this, you know, car lot, but I'm also Michigan's biggest booster. And yeah, of course, I would pay $14 million for, you know, a kid to pat the hood of an F-150 one time or something like that. You know what I mean? Hopefully that helps filter some of that stuff out. And, you know, really, even like when you get, because when you talk about the Bryce Underwood situation, that's definitely just a pay for play recruiting thing, correct, right? What I would actually like to see, and this just kind of came to my mind right now, something in addition to this, I would like to see if you were to go one step further, I would like, you know, with the NFL, because that's kind of what we're going to, where if you had like rookie contracts.
Oh,
you
know, I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that.
I would like to see where an incoming recruit can a cap. Like, you can't be paid more than X amount of dollars. So that way you're just not paying a boatload of money for a kid just to come step foot on your campus who might not even play. I mean, you know, that would, I think that would also help. You know, you can negotiate that deal up, but look at the Nico situation.
That's right.
You know, they paid him all that money and then he wanted more. So it's going to be interesting, man. And I know with these, like, the kids are, the schools are paying to own the NIL rights for the kids. So that's, it's going to be, you know, it's going to give a little bit more negotiating power to the schools too, I think, as well. But then I think at the end here, man, to kind of bring this full circle is, what does this mean for the fan? What does this mean for you and me, the butts in the seats, the eyes on the TV? What does this mean? So for me, and these are kind of my own takeaways from this, and I'll let Michael expand on his as well. But for me, I think first thing is it means possible competitive balance. Now, you notice I put possible in there because nothing is guaranteed. You get somewhat of a salary cap, and you do get a little bit of an opportunity for reduced pay for play. Now, again, like I said, you can still work things where you can donate through businesses and things like that. You know, everybody's got a way to do things to kind of skirt through past the rules. But it will be a little bit less pay for play, which I think will help bring some of that competitive balance back. You can't just have, you know, the big schools just essentially buying your players off of your roster. Now, again, like I said, that conference revenue gap will become even more critical as you have to try and keep up. The second thing I think that it means for fans is increased cost. We talked about this earlier in the show. That money has to come from somewhere. And one thing these schools are not going to do is lose money. That is for sure. So they're going to pay out the money because they want to be competitive. But that also means things are going to get, that cost is going to get passed down somewhere. Chances are it's going to be us, the fans. That's going to happen through increased ticket prices. We've already seen, I think it was Tennessee that teased the talent fee that they were going to add on to, like a 10% fee or something like that on the tickets. Like Michael mentioned, the concessions could be something. You know, you may also even see, I don't know, maybe your cable package down the line go up a little bit more because it costs more to do these, you know, to air these games and things like that. And the last, I think the question that we all have on our mind as we go forward, and again, this is something that we're going to have to probably give at least 2 to 3 years to play out and see how it goes, is will this save the game that we love? And I think that that answer is simply wait and see. We just don't know yet. I think it has the potential, like I told Michael before the show, I think it has the potential to do a lot of good for the sport that we love because it has gone so far off the rails with just no rules. It's the Wild West between NIL and the portal. I know that the schools have kicked around some things with the portal and maybe going down to like one portal period per year, some things like that. So I think if this comes together like they want it to, right, and they actually enforce NIL, they vet these deals, and they're strict about it, and they get past the legal red tape, and they bring the portal down to maybe one or two windows that are more heavily enforced and things like that, then I think this has a potential to kind of – it's not going to be the game that we're used to, right? This ain't going to be your granddaddy's college football like we talk about. It's not from the 80s and 90s. That's not what this sport is going to be anymore. There's always going to be the transfer market. There's always going to be the NIL and the pay for play and things like that. But I think this can bring it back to a better version of mixing old college football and new college football together, where you can pay players, you can have the transfer market, which, again, I'm in favor of both. If it wasn't for the transfer portal, you know, maybe 2 and 10 don't happen either, but maybe 13 and 1 surely don't happen. And so I think it has the framework to bring it in-house and bring it back to center a little bit, but it's still going to be a different game going forward. But man, this is probably your best shot right now at kind of saving college football for the purest of us that want a little bit of what college football used to be under the kind of the new format.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've hit it spot on, and I'll just add two to that. And mine's a little unique. I think what this means for the college football fan is the fan to player, player to fan relationship takes on a whole new dynamic. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, yeah, of course, like, you know, in this age of social media, we could get on social media real quick and, you know, DM somebody, at somebody on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, and say our comments, right? But oftentimes, most people with common sense would jump in and be like, hey, man, you shouldn't be talking to the players like that. Like, I understand you're upset, blah, 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 but that's the players. They're working their tail off. They don't get paid for this, blah, blah, blah. Now that they get paid, and now that basically we're going to eventually be able to see what they get paid, I think that fan, the player, player to fan relationship is going to become very much professional. Whereas it doesn't matter what you say to these players now because they're being paid for this. It's their job. And in some ways, the fan is the receiver of the end product. And when we don't like the product, we're going to go review that product quickly, fastly, hastily. I'm not saying I'm going to be that way. I'm just saying that's what's going to happen. So you're going to see a lot more people in those college football players' DMs and adding them. And they're going to be saying some things that you don't want your grandma to hear. And these players need to be ready for that, right? So the vitriol of a fan response, and make sure you hear us at Plant the Spirit. We're not condoning that action. We're not saying you should do that. We're just saying that's going to be the reality of this. And then the other thing is, and Jesse, you already brought this up, is that your pockets, man, you know how like in the cartoons, they pull out the pocket and like it's like flies and a bubble gum. That's basically what your pocket is going to be looking like, because it, no matter what happens in a capitalistic society, when an organization incurs a cost, they end up passing that cost down to the consumer. You and I, Jesse and I, we're all the consumers. And so making up the gap for the $20.5 million, making up the gap to pay these players, making up the gap to pay coaches, making up the gap to maintain facilities and do all the things they need to do, that is going to make its way down to us. And at some point, Jesse, you and I have talked about this a lot. We've talked about this a lot. At some point, when does the fan say enough is enough? Yep. We just can't, like the NFL. What I appreciate about the NFL and Major League Baseball and all those organizations is they have the fan in mind. Yes, ticket prices can go up and all those things, but that's it. With MLB, with NFL, we're paying for ticket prices and merchandise. We're not paying for those players' salary. We're not paying for their facilities. We're not paying any of that stuff. Now, you can argue about the taxpayers and all that stuff. That's a different thing. But in college football, we pay for everything, facilities, travel, all like that stuff, NIL now, coaches' salary, everything comes from the fans. And so at some point, I wonder what this means for us in saying enough is enough. We're done paying.
Yeah, and I do think it's interesting because I've actually kind of always been in favor of the house settlement, because I think some of the onus of paying these players should go back on the schools that are the ones, frankly, that reap the benefits. I mean, absolutely. You know, you think about it, like again, you got to pay for tickets, you got to pay for merchandise, you got to pay for parking, travel, you have to pay for your booster contribution, your NIL contribution. Yes. Like, those hit the account every single month, you know, those things that you have to pay for. And so the cost is going to go up. And yes, I like that it's putting some of the onus back on the school. But again, that school is going to eventually pass it down to us. So we'll have to see. You know, we've been fortunate for at Florida State to have reasonably priced tickets and game day experiences for a long time. I imagine with the renovations and things like that and the facilities that they're building, it was only naturally going to go up. And this is going to, you know, this is something that's going to feed into that.
Yep.
Regardless, anyway, but that's what I think it pretty much means in a nutshell for the fans is it can, you know, to really recap it, schools are going to start paying players, right? It was bound to happen eventually anyway. This does provide some structure into that. And I do think that it will be good in the long run if and only if it can be enforced properly. I think if you can do that across all Power Five levels, that or Power Four conferences, should I say, then man, I think you have a real framework here to kind of bring some rule and some order back to college football.
Yeah.
But we don't know, man. This thing could be bogged down in so many lawsuits and stuff like that we don't, it's just going to wait and see. And so that's the House settlement. Hopefully it helps you guys understand in a need to know basis what it's going to mean for you from the fans' perspective. Now, the last couple of things we got to talk about, Michael, is some recruiting updates for 2026, starting with two new commits for Florida State. First up is defensive lineman. Michael, I struggle with this name. I'm hoping it's just a really fancy way of saying Whitley Cadu.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm calling him. I've never seen it spelled that way, but hey, we're rolling with it. Three-star defensive lineman. Now, I know some of you guys are probably going to roll your eyes a little bit over a three-star, but I promise you, you're going to want to hold that eye roll for a second here. Great size, 6'5", 295 pounds out of North Georgia. Number 125 defensive lineman, according to the 247 composite here. But the reason I say to hold that eye roll, man, is that 6'5", 295 is on an excellent frame. That is one of the things that make him a really high upside guy. He's already got good size. I mean, you can't coach 6'5", 295, but he's also got a really good frame and really good length. He's a very strong prospect too, but he is fairly raw. So there is going to have to be some development there.
Right.
The thing that with Cadu here is he did record 39 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, and 1 sack as a junior last year. He's fairly raw, again, like I mentioned. So he's still relatively kind of new to the game here. The one thing when you look at the other offers, this is why I say don't pay a whole lot of attention to that three-star there. The other offers here were from Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Central Florida, and Georgia Tech. The one I really want to pay attention to here is that UGA offer. Now, I did post about this, and I wrote an article on it for the website. Some people are like, yeah, but was it a real committable offer? From what I understand, and this was posted, I have a screenshot of the tweet that I don't have to share on this show, but Dogs HQ, which is On3, a major media outlet's their Georgia page, they said that Georgia was making this kid a priority, right? And if Georgia's making him a priority and he's a three-star, that's kind of a, you know, that's a pretty good stamp of approval right there on what you're getting from him. Now, with that being mentioned, the downside to this is he does still plan on taking an official to Athens coming up. He did cancel his visit to Central Florida. So, you know, as always, half the battle in recruiting is holding on to them. So you're going to have to try and hang on to this kid. But man, I mean, I don't really care about the star ranking. When you talk about this kid here, I think this is one that probably not an immediate impact, but you know, year two, year three, something like that, when he grows into that frame and has a little bit of development, this can be a really high upside pickup for Florida State in the trenches.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a great pickup. And like you said, I mean, he's raw, but he is moldable at this stage in plays. You can't coach 6'5", 295. That is something you just can't coach, and it's hard to find. So when you get it, you know, you take it as is, and you hope that you have a great development team with Pat Rose there on the defensive line to be able to do that as well. And honestly, you know, listen, I know he's still taking his commitment to UGA, but you know, I think of commitments these days like a song playlist. They last about as long as your song lasts on that playlist. Yeah. So we take it as is, and the whole job of recruitment now is all about, can you sustain that commitment? Can you close the deal? ABC, always be closing. So we'll see if that defensive staff of Florida State can hold on to this one.
Yeah, you make me nervous talking about Florida State and always be closing. Because we're always closed, not closing. I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean that. But it's true, man. You got to hang on to them. But the other commitment that we got to talk about here is four-star wide receiver Brandon Bennett. Now, this is a big pickup for Florida State on the offensive side of the ball and new wide receiver coach Tim Harris Jr. So 6'1", 170 out of American Heritage there in South Florida. As most of you know, that is the high school where Patrick Surtain came from. So I don't know if, you know, maybe he had a little bit of help in this too. But number 33 wide receiver, number 218 recruit nationally. So bumping that top 200 national recruit there. Man, this kid is special, right? You got 25 offers is the one thing you want to know about this kid, including Florida, Georgia, Bama, Miami, and Auburn. So he chose you. Basically, from what I heard, it was down to Florida State, Georgia, and Florida. So those are a couple of good schools to beat out there. Again, got to hang on to them.
Right.
But caught 24 passes for 509 yards, 21.2 yards per catch, and 7 touchdowns last year as a junior. Also had a kickoff return touchdown against – or in a championship game there as well. When we talk about Brandon Bennett here, speed, and more speed is what comes to mind. He is a track athlete as well. He can take the top off of defense and be a vertical threat for this offense, which is something that I'm really excited to see. You know, again, not a big guy at only 6'1", 170, but man, if you can get him on, you know, get him to the edge, get him lined up against a guy who doesn't have that type of speed, you know, this kind of almost reminds me of like a Mekhi Dansey type of kid,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Just, man, not the biggest, but the speed is what you're after here. So big pickup for Florida State, four-star wide receiver. Gonna have to hang on to him, but man, it's always good to beat out Florida and Georgia for a kid.
Absolutely. It's always good to be out. And you know how I've talked about this before. I play, you know, college football 25. I love them 6 foot taller and taller wide receivers. And this guy, definitely with those 25 plus offers, they all wanted him. They all wanted him. And right now, Florida State's got him. So can we hold on to him? Can we make sure that we fend them off and see, hopefully he ends up a Nola at the end of the day.
Yeah, so when you add these two to Florida State's 2026 class, that gives them 11 total commits, and they are ranked 30th in the 247 composite. Now, that's not good enough, but nope, it's still early, and it's still a relatively small class with only 11 commits. But, you know, Michael, we just talked about a four-star wide receiver, which is a great addition to the class.
Yes.
The unfortunate part is, Michael, that receiver at some point in his career in Tallahassee is going to need somebody to throw him the ball.
That's right.
And right now we're struggling in that department.
That's right.
So Florida State recently, as we talked about, I recorded the most ill-timed quarterback recruiting update in the history of YouTube here of podcasting. We talked about three main targets, right? And Florida State, poof and poof, is now out of two of those races. We already saw the Henderson kid reaffirm his commitment to Houston and eliminate Florida right. State, canceled his official visit there. Now we have seen Landon Duckworth also go down to his top two, which is going to be South Carolina and Auburn. He did eliminate Florida State from that top two and canceled his official visit. This is pretty, you know, stab and twist type of news here, Michael. I mean, yeah, it's not good because this was one that, you know, Gus Malzahn almost had committed at UCF. One of them.
UCF. One of them U schools.
He almost had him committed at UCF and then moves to Florida State and things, I guess, just kind of didn't work out there as well with the connection. And I mean, South Carolina was a school that he committed to in the past and then decommitted and maybe recommitting. Auburn, you know,
yeah,
that's, you know, they're willing to cheat with their head coach,
right,
Hugh Freeze there. So we don't know what they got going on. But yeah, man, it's just not, it's just another disappointment that we talked about before when we talked about with the Henderson kid. It's just another disappointment at quarterback recruiting here. And I understand you're not in a real quarterback friendly system, and you're coming off a disappointing season. So maybe if you have a turnaround season, you can, you know, work your way back into a recruitment here or something like that, or find another option. It's just disappointing, man. It's just another thing there. So now it seems like you basically have Jaden O'Neal, who is still committed to Oklahoma. I don't even want to say anything about his official visit because every time I talk about it, they cancel it.
That's right.
That's basically a domino piece. You're waiting to see if they land Bo Bentley over LSU or not. And if they don't, then you might not end up with an opportunity to land this kid either.
That
point, you're pretty much banking on Kevin Sperry being your guy next year, or going to the portal, or hopefully Brock Glenn turns out to be something. But you still have to fill that room with bodies. You know, we already talked about it. Trevor Jackson was gone. You're losing Tommy Castellanos after this year. You don't know that Brock Glenn is ready to be your starter. And Kevin Sperry is only going to be probably a redshirt freshman at that point.
That's right.
And so, man, it's just, you know, there's, you're not leaving a lot of depth there. And so this is a little bit of a disappointment from Florida State from the quarterback recruiting, which by this point we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, we've almost become numb to it. Every time I see a headline about, oh, this quarterback has eliminated Florida State, this quarterback has eliminated Florida State, it's almost like, yeah, that's what they expected. Honestly, you know, we're going to have to rely on the portal. I want to be positive here. We're going to have to rely on the portal again, including next year, because, you know, Thomas Castellanos, depending on how he turns out, will be gone after this next year. And then you got Cameron Sperry. You know, we'll see what happens with Brock Glenn. I mean, he'll basically be I think he should be a redshirt senior next year.
Next year, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Next. And so whether or not he stays in the program or transfers, that's to be seen. And then, What after that? And so are they really going to turn it over to, if Brock is gone or not ready, are they going to turn it over to a basically a redshirt freshman to run the ship? And so, you know, it's just, it's been the quarterback recruiting, developing outside of Jordan Travis has been, for a lack of a better term, it's been incredibly unacceptable. And yeah, it should not be Florida State's case. We should not be struggling to recruit, sustain, and develop high caliber quarterbacks.
Right. And I think on top of that, too, you also look at, like, what if Kevin Sperry is actually that dude that they talked about and he ends up winning the job next year and Brock Glenn transfers?
Right.
You got one guy in the quarterback room other than the basically the walk-on that they took.
That's right.
Tied in with an arm. You know, that's just a situation that you're in. And again, man, it's like, one of these was to Houston, and I get they're the hometown school, and the other ones are South Carolina and Auburn. Like, who cares? Like, who have never really won anything, you know, in the recent history? I mean, South Carolina's got an ACC championship and not an SEC championship, if that tells you something. So, I don't know, man. Like you said, it's getting unacceptable. It is unacceptable.
It is.
There's no way about it. It is unacceptable. So, hopefully, a rebound season can help fix that, and you land the O'Neal kid. But man, you went from 3-1 real fast. Really? And so the last bit of news here, we'll end on a positive note here, is a new staff addition, Zach Arnett, former head coach of Mississippi State, former DC of Mississippi State. You can see, if you're watching on YouTube here, his experience listed on the slide. He began his career at San Diego State, where he was a GA / linebacker coach from 2011 to 2017. He did play linebacker at New Mexico, where Tony White coached him. That's the connection there. Then he was a linebacker DC coach at San Diego State from 2018 to 2019. Then he took the job with Mississippi State, was their DC in 2020 to 2022, and the head coach for a very short amount of time in 2023. He spent last year at Ole Miss being an analyst there for their defense in 2024. And Ole Miss, keep in mind, did have the second-ranked defense last year. Now, again, I want to make two things clear, right? First off, he's just an analyst. Obviously, he's not calling the defensive plays or anything like that. But I think this is a good addition, man. This is something that we saw, like, Nick Saban leaned on heavily a lot of times, that, you know, the Nick Saban coaching rehab clinic, as they called it. You see this happen, like, with Georgia does this. They have Will Muschamp on staff. You know, you have a lot of these schools that are doing this, where they're getting these kind of head coaches that didn't work out for one reason or the other and putting them on staff. And I think that's great in a head coaching, or excuse me, in an analyst role, to have that experience on staff, especially in an analyst role, where you're basically getting another voice in the room that has experience as a head man, as a recruiter, as an analyst, as a defensive coordinator. And you're getting him for pennies on the dollar, right? Because most of these analysts, they only make like $75,000 a year or something crazy like that, because they're usually getting paid from the other school. Now, when we talk about his experience here, he does run a 3-3-5 defense, which is why I think it's a natural fit for him to come in here. During his time as a DC, his defenses weren't what I would say is elite by any means, but they weren't terrible either, right? Scoring defense at San Diego State, he had the 32nd ranked in 18 and then the second ranked defense in 2019. So I give him credit for that. He had a really, really good defense there at San Diego State. Mississippi State, basically 50s to 60s. He had one top 40 defense there as the DC at Mississippi State. I'm not really worried about his head coaching record. A lot of people kind of made a big deal about, well, he was kind of a failure as a head coach. Look, let me give you a couple of things here. First off, he was put into really an abnormal situation with the passing of Mike Leach. You know, God rest his soul. The Pirate was a gift to college football. Yeah, that is for sure. I don't even know that he was ready to be a head coach. You know, he was still a young DC. He's only 38 years old. I don't even know that he was ready to make that jump yet. The other thing, the other point here, why I don't worry about it is there's a lot of really good defensive coordinators who don't make really good head coaches, right? Will Muschamp, that we just talked about, great example of that. Well, wonderful DC, terrible head coach. Charlie Strong, another guy, great DC, awful head coach. So that doesn't mean that he can't be good in the role that he's in. And then the last thing here is what he had to do as a head coach has nothing to do with the role he's going to be serving at Florida State as a defensive analyst. So that doesn't matter for me. What I like, again, is that you have a guy with a lot of experience at the Power Four level as a coordinator now on your staff as an analyst. Because, you know, one thing, Michael, I have, you know, Florida State's building the facilities. They're doing the stadium renovations. They're going out and paying the coordinators and things like that. The one thing I always really thought Florida State could benefit from was an expanded support staff. You know, we saw them bring on Ernie Sims. We saw them bring on, you know, gosh, like Rick Stockstill
Middle Tennessee
coaching.
State.
Yeah, middle, terrible head coaching record. you know, maybe that's what happened in 2024. But I like adding these guys to the off-the-field staff because it's just more voices in the room that are scouting, that are looking at the opponents, that are, you know, he might find one mismatch that wins one game. And if that was worth it, then that is worth his salary. So to me, I just don't see how this is bad news to bring on Zach Arnett.
Yeah, me either. I think, look, more eyes and that can help these coaches be able to see. And now that the support staff can actually be on the field and coach players.
Yeah, that's a big point.
That's gonna add even better. And so the more expertise you have to be able to help correct the things that you can't see because you got, you know, so you know, right now 85 to 100, you know, athletes there that you're trying to coach up and you're trying to run through practices. Now, with somebody who's had the Power Four experience, who's been a coordinator, been a head coach, you know, who's going to adapt to your system, he already knows all the things that you want to get done because he's done it before. And so you don't have to retrain him and all of those things. So I think this is a great addition. You know, if it helps, if it's going to help to win, listen, Nick Saban had an army of support staff people. And I'm sure they were violating rules and they were on the field coaching and all like that stuff. And they won six national championships. So whatever helps us win, do it.
Yeah, no, 1,000% agree. Again, like I said, you know, more eyes is always a good thing. Now, the last thing I do want to touch on, I forgot to mention this. I hate that we're going to end on a little bit of a downer note here. Baseball season does come to an end out in Corvallis. Unfortunately, Florida State loses the Super Regional 2-1. I know it's a little bit old news now, so I'm not going to go stressing about it. I'm not going to bring that pain back up, but they were literally one out away from being in Omaha. It is unfortunate that it comes to that end, that they blew that lead there. I'm glad to see that they fought back in one game two. I'm glad to see that they put up a little bit of a fight in game three after letting things get away. You know, the truth be told, man, when I look at this baseball team this year, I don't think it's anything to really hang your head about. They still made a super regional. There was a lot of really good teams that would have loved to have been that far, or even, you know, that didn't make it. Omaha, Tennessee is a team that didn't make it. Texas is a team that didn't make it.
Vanderbilt, number one overall.
Vanderbilt, right. It's been a crazy year. So, and you faced a daggone good Oregon State team.
Yeah.
You know, judging by the way things went in that super regional, I don't know how much pitching depth you had to make it very far in Omaha to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think with that being said, it is disappointment, right? Because you didn't make it to Omaha. You didn't win the ACC regular season. You didn't win the ACC tournament. So it's kind of a really good year that you won 40-plus games. You were ranked number two at one point. You didn't really come home with anything. So I think that's a little bit disappointing. Obviously, I want to say personally thank you to Jamie Arnold, who's probably not watching this, but man, it was really a pleasure to watch him compete. I did see that he has already said his goodbyes to Florida State. I mean, he's probably the number one pick in the draft, so there's no reason for him to come back. Gage Harrelson, also another guy who was very influential for this team, also said his goodbyes too, so appreciate getting to watch him in Garnet and Gold. But man, I do want to end positive though, so I want to say that, like, when I look at this baseball team, right, you have a lot of things that you have to answer for next year, right? You don't have Jamie Arnold coming back next year. You still don't have great bullpen depth. That's unfortunate. So you are losing all those things that you have to replace. But I think what the last 2 years have shown us is that Link Jarrett has done a pretty daggone good job of identifying young talent. Miles Bailey, probably the best freshman in college baseball right now. And guess what? That guy's coming back.
Yep.
You also have an ability to go out and make an impact in the portal. Gage Harrelson is a great example for that. A lot of the guys that they got. some of these, you know, some of the big name portal additions that they've had. Gage Harrelson, again, you know, those are guys that have made a big impact. And again, Florida State, when they lost all those players after 2023 season and or 2024 season, and everybody said, oh, well, you know, they lost Cam Smith and James Tibbs and Jaime Ferrer, they're not going to be able to recreate that type of season. They were one out away from making it to Omaha. So Link knows what he's doing. He has this program rolling. And so to me, there's only reason to be excited about the future of FSU baseball. The only thing I worry about is, man, as a collective whole, we got to figure out this pitching staff. Yeah. Because you cannot go into another year with another, you know, just, I mean, unreliable bullpen that the depth is just terrible in. And it's really unpredictable what they did. But, you know, overall, again, Supers for the second year in a row. He didn't make it to Omaha, but, man, there's plenty of reason to be excited about the future of FSU baseball.
Yeah, you know, Jesse, and I'll add to that is it wasn't even just one out. They were one strike away.
Yeah.
They had multiple two strike situations where it just took one pitch. And we're in Omaha right now. So I think that's what's frustrating about that. I think, again, this is the third year straight going back to the, you know, first terrible season, but then going to Omaha last year and going to the Supers this year, that your bullpen lets you down because you don't have enough arms. At some point, again, like, you know, these are good things because Link has obviously proven he can win and he can develop talent. But, you know, for a program that's trying to break the freaking curse and win a national championship. Like, these are the things. These are the things that separate us from a Oregon State, right? They had a bullpen that when things got tight, they could just go to arm and find them that work. We relied on two to three different players out of the pen that was going to help us. And we were one strike away when it all fell apart. Yeah, I'm right. So proud of the response that we had in the next game. But then Mendez, who was, you know, I think Link said he was under the weather. He didn't have his stuff. He couldn't locate his breaking pitches, and his fastball velocity was way down. And so when you're just sitting there for that fastball, no wonder they were crushing home runs. And so again, I think this is where I think Link has to do the work in this offseason is we've got to get reliable arms. Him and Michael Posey have got to figure this out of finding these arms and getting the confidence in them to do that. And I actually think I heard that Vellini will be back next year because he's probably looking like him or Mendez is looking like your Friday starter, I think, right now. So they've got to go get another starter there. And honestly, what you really need is, I know Link is super engaged in this idea that you got to have three starters, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Honestly, you should take the posture of these other teams that are getting to Omaha, who they have a Friday and they have a Saturday starter, and then they got a bunch of darn good bullpen long relievers. And then you rotate that and you figure out what your weekday starter is and all like that stuff. That's how I think you develop this. That way you have that. And then, of course, on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, yes, Miles Bailey is going to be a phenom. My goodness. And don't forget that Chase Williams, who was injured and could only bat, who's a switch hitter, he finally started to come on in game two and in game three of this series. He's going to be a heck of a player if he can continue to get bet to heal from that. So I'm excited. I'm enthusiastic. I've watched more college baseball than I've ever watched in the last 2 years. Yeah. So I'm in. I'm full in for Florida State baseball. And I believe that Link will have him back competing again next season.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you got some young talent on this team. I mean, Hunter Carnes is a great catcher that you got back there behind the plate. So you have a lot of talent to build around of. I've seen that they've already got some pretty good transfer portal additions, which, you know, once they get that batch rounded up, we'll kind of talk about that later. But you just got to do something about this pitching depth, man. The depth is huge, and you're not going to have Jamie Arnold next year. Would it be nice to have Cam Leiter, which is basically the mythical unicorn of the Florida State fan base. Like, I've heard stories about it, but I don't think I've seen it in the wild once. I just don't know that it actually exists. So that's it. Unfortunately, like I said, baseball comes to a little bit of a disappointing end, but man, you knew that was going to be a tough ask going 2,800 miles to go against a really solid Oregon State team. But I just feel really good about the point that the program is in, right? Yeah. I mean, this is As long as he doesn't follow Mike Norvell's path and we have a 2-10 season next year, I think we'll be good to go. So that's going to be it, guys. We're going to wrap this episode up for here today. Really enjoy talking with you guys, hanging out, talking some football. Make sure that if you're interested in joining the PTS tribe, that you hit that join button if you're watching on YouTube. Again, we'd love to have you as a member of the family. If you don't, you're still a member of the family, and you're still going to get all of our content one way or the other. So we're just throwing that out there for you guys. So we appreciate it, and we'll be back with you for another episode next week. Make sure you check out plantthespear.com. I'm trying to keep up with articles. I've been doing a lot better about it as well there. So, you know, just I don't know this a lot's gonna happen this weekend, Michael. It's boat weather here, right?
That's right.
So
that's
I'm right. I'm taking the pontoon boat out this weekend. So I will be off duty on Saturday. But hope that you guys have a great weekend as well, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for watching. As always, go Noles.